You might remember that we started off by looking at the first few verses of the Heart Sutra, and even before the first few verses of the version of the Heart Sutra that we look at, where in some versions it places it in context and says who's doing the talking and where it's taking place. And so that was an opportunity to look at the historical context of where this sutra emerged from, the Mahayana movement that emerged from Buddhism after about 500 years, and so the context in which it arises. And then in week two we looked at the protagonist of the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. So other than the first, four lines, everything is spoken by Avalokiteshvara. So he's having this debate, this discussion. Well, it's not a discussion, is it, when it's just one? It's a monologue, really, isn't it, I suppose? Talking to Shariputra. And trying to explain things. And I suppose then we looked in later weeks at some of the things that he was trying to explain. So he talked about this idea within Buddhism of our personal universe being able to be broken down into five skandhas, five heaps. So this idea that we have the external form, the actual things, the bits and the bobs and all their properties, which are external to us, and including ourselves, I suppose, our own matter that makes us up. And then the perception, the sensations that impinge upon our sense organs. And then the sense that we try to make of that, the interpretation that we make of that. And then the volitions that arise from that, our choices to act in certain ways. And then fifthly, how all that takes place within consciousness. And I think that could be a useful breakdown sometimes in trying to figure out what our involvement is in certain situations. So the extent to which we are adding things to situations. Do you ever get two people can read an email and have quite different interpretations? You know, some people think, oh, who does he think he is? And somebody else can read it and think, well, I thought it was quite okay. So it's obviously something external to the email itself that's being added. So I think this kind of analysis could be useful sometimes. I find it useful in just being aware of what we are bringing to the situation and what, on the other hand, is objectively there. But what Avalokiteshvara was trying to say with how all these things, these five things, these five heaps of things, are ultimately empty. They are shunyata. That's to say that they don't have any substance of their own. They don't have any lasting nature of their own. They're all provisional. We're all provisional. Everything moves through a process. It doesn't have any underlying, unchanging essence. But many of our problems can be relating to things as if they did have some sort of substance. They are able to satisfy us in some lasting way, and they are lasting. So he looked at the five skandhas in particular about that, but then went also on to talk about, beyond that, even Buddhist concepts and Buddhist dogma and Buddhist teachings, how they themselves can be problems if we cling on to them in some sort of way, as if we have understood in some concrete way the way things are. Whereas really, these are pointers to try and help us, they're tools to try and help us. And things that we should hold on to lightly, that we should try and understand is that we have a provisional understanding of things, that our understanding is continuing to grow and deepen over a period of time. And then it's a mistake to think that we have an absolute understanding of things. So, to reiterate, one of the arguments is to avoid replacing one concept, such as a thing, a cup or a bowl, with another concept, shunyata, and thinking that we also have an understanding of shunyata itself. So not only should we hold lightly on to all other Buddhist concepts, but even the concept of shunyata itself. So that ultimately, as he says in line 34, we are left with holding to nothing whatever. Which could be quite exhilarating, quite scary, I suppose, but quite liberating too. I mentioned Green Tara at one point in the course, or perhaps more than one point in the course, The green Tara meditation is a moderately lengthy practice, and then there's one part where you imagine all things, or visualise all things, to be made up of green light. And that green light sort of expands out from yourself to encompass the whole universe. And then, bit by bit, that all contracts back in again, so that the green light from the distant galaxies and so on merges into those closer to us, and the stars and the planets in our solar system, and that all merges down into our planet, and that all merges down into our country, and that all merges down into our city and the building in which we're living, and then into our physical selves, and then ultimately just merges down into nothingness. And again, the feeling there can be that you are left holding on to literally nothing whatever. Everything's been merged down into nothingness, which again can be quite odd. So ultimately, reality itself cannot be explained in words or any other concepts. They simply don't have the ability to hold such meanings. And so we should avoid expecting them to. The current Dalai Lama said that even emptiness itself, shunyata, is not absolute, nor does it exist independently. We cannot conceive of emptiness as independent of a basis of phenomena, because when we examine the nature of reality, we find that it is empty of inherent existence. Then if we are to take that emptiness itself as an object and look for its essence, again we will find that it is empty of inherent existence. Therefore the Buddha taught the emptiness of emptiness. So again, this idea of, yes, we can see that matter is, we may see that matter is empty of any inherent essence of its own. It's just a changing thing in the process of becoming whatever it's going to become next. So it doesn't have any inherent essence. And if you think, okay, that's shunyata. But then if we try and sort of think, well, that's shunyata, I've got a handle on that now. But shunyata itself is not a thing. It itself is empty of any inherent nature too. So what we could say perhaps is don't necessarily expect to understand the Heart Sutra intellectually or purely intellectually. In fact, as Avalokiteshvara advises, reflect on these things. And of course, it is good to study intellectually, but just as importantly, allow the sutra to have an effect on the emotions, without necessarily asking why it's having that effect. As I think I might have mentioned, you know, a friend of mine, when he first heard the Heart Sutra, told us later he knew it was important, but he couldn't think why. And that's fine. So it's good to let the words of the sutra or the dharani impinge upon your being and have whatever effect that it may have.